The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
I'm Don Heacock with the Division of Aquatic Resources, Department of Land and Natural Resources.
I'm here to announce our new interactive radio program entitled
Kauai Kai and Why,
where we'll talk about our island's freshwater and marine resources. We'll encourage listeners to call in and we'll take questions.
Ideally, to empower you to help us conserve and restore these important ecological and economic resources for the well-being of Kauai's watersheds. Our live Kauai Kai program will be on the first and third Fridays of each month. Abuiho, malama kona.
Aloha, this is Adam Asquith with the University of Hawaii Sea Grant College program.
And this is Don Heacock with the Division of Aquatic Resources.
Thank you for joining us for another version of Kauai Kai and Why, where we talk about the island's marine and freshwater resources and sustainable ways of utilizing them for the benefit of our community, where we try to talk with Kupuna and Kahuna, want to share their mana'o with regard to sustainable management of those resources. We're fortunate today we're going to be joined by in the studio by telephone from three guests who will be over here this evening to share their mana'o with us in Kalapaki on Hawaiian water law. That is a workshop on Hawaiian water law at the Niumalu Canoe Club in Kalapaki. So it's a little bit of confusion about Niumalu and Kalapaki. There is another canoe club, Kaiola, that is actually located in Niumalu itself, whereas the Niumalu Canoe Club is located in Kalapaki, just on the Makai side of JJ's Broiler.
At the
now Willy Willy end of the pier.
That's right. One way to think about it is the old canoe club and the new one.
All right.
The new one's in Na Willy Willy.
So do we have our guests online? Aloha, this is Adam.
Aloha, girls, this is Don.
Aloha.
Wow, you guys, you're on speakerphone over there. We can hear all of you at the same time.
Yeah.
Oh, this is cool.
This is a first.
So so do we have Hoku, Dalen, and Morgan?
Yep.
All right. So if you guys don't mind, so I just explained a little bit that you guys are part of a class from Richardson School of Law at the University of Hawaii, Manoa, who are coming over this evening to present a workshop on Hawaiian water law for us. Is that correct?
Yes. That's right, along with Professor Kapuasprout.
Oh, yes, of course.
Of course.
but we have you guys on the line, so we're gonna tout you guys. If you don't mind, we'll get into kind of the details of the workshop and the water law and all that kind of stuff. If you don't mind, if you could introduce yourselves for the listening audience and kind of share a little bit about who you are, and then I'm going to ask you some personal questions about why you want to be attorneys.
And what especially got you interested in water law?
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess I can start. My name is Dalen Gibson. I'm from Kaneohe on Oahu. Kamehameha graduate and a third year student here at Richardson.
And third year, how many years is law school?
Oh, 3 years. This is my last year of law.
This is your last year. So you should be like a fledged lawyer next year. Is that the idea?
Something, I don't know.
Okay, you get your stripes or wings or
yeah, you have to get your stripes. You still have to pass the bar and okay. Stuff, but we're probably as close as we're going to get.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
Hoku or Morgan?
My name's Morgan Evans. I'm originally from a small town in southeast Georgia, and I'm also in my last year of law school.
Cool. And Hoku?
I am Hoku Kaikuhibi. I'm from Makaha on Oahu. I'm also in my third year of law school at Richardson.
So you guys are all, and I apologize, I don't know that much about law school and so forth. So it's 3 years, so you guys will graduate, what, at the next term in?
In May, yeah.
In May. And then in order to practice law, you've got to pass some test?
Yeah, so then we graduate in May, and then most will sit for the July bar exam. So right after we graduate and we walk, we have to go straight back to the classroom and start studying for the bar. And then when we pass the bar being positive, then we'll be licensed attorneys.
Okay, so my guess, based on the fact that you're coming over here this evening to talk to a couple of folks like us, that you're not into, like, investment banking. You're not going to run off to London.
Yeah, no, far from it.
Jet ski tours.
So are there different, focuses in law school that you can work on?
Yes, actually, the law school has a lot of different programs and certificates that you can get. So there's three in particular. There's a Pacific Asian legal certificate. Then there's a Kahuliao, so there's a Native Hawaiian law certificate, which focuses on different aspects of Native Hawaiian law that affects Kanaka Maoli populations. And then there's the environmental certificate. There's an environmental certificate that focuses on environmental issues. And the Native Hawaiian certificate and the environmental certificate kind of overlap. So a lot of people who don't want to, you know, go into corporate finance or something will alternatively try to get a certificate in a different area of law.
And so will you be receiving one of those certificates?
Yeah, so I think Hoku and I are getting the Native Hawaiian law certificate.
Mm-hmm. And I'll be getting Morgan will be getting the environmental law certificate.
Yeah.
And so this in this class is like part of the requirement for receiving one of those certificates?
Yeah, it's required for all of them, actually. If you are not, if you're trying to get the Native Hawaiian Law Certificate, environmental law can be used as one of the required clinical classes.
But for, like, Hoku, this is her second semester taking environmental clinics, so yeah. You're kind of going above and beyond what's required.
Wow, well, you'll be doubly useful to us then.
Yes, yes, that's the point.
And what exactly is this class that Kapua is teaching?
So she teaches a lot of classes, but this one in particular is an environmental clinic, and it's a way to get students who are interested in environmental issues some practical experience working on different issues that affect, you know, Hawaii. So this year we're focusing on water, and we're just doing some research in the Puna area on different water issues.
The large goal of the environmental law clinic each semester is to provide direct legal services with a focus on rural neighbor island communities. So,
And what's different and kind of exciting from a law student perspective about this type of program is that we get to sort of step out into the real world and apply what we've learned, and it's a little bit more intimidating, but it's a lot more fun than the regular classroom style learning.
So that's really important. I mean, so if you didn't have a class like this where you actually get to work on potential legal issues, you would just go through your academic work and then jump out there and then into the real law world. So have you guys had any? Do you have any back experience in law? I mean, have you worked for law? How does that work?
You can do different ways to get practical experience at the law school. So it's either through taking a clinic, and there's a bunch of different types of clinics that are offered here, or you can do an externship or an internship. Or externship is when you get credit for getting practical experience and working at a firm or at the legislature or something. And then also there's like summer employment opportunities, so a lot of people will try to get legal experience during the summer.
But I think a lot of us came in a lot of students come in with specific legal backgrounds, like they were paralegals and that kind of thing. But it's pretty interesting the backgrounds of people that come through the doors of Richardson, and maybe we can share where we came from before this. Like, I worked at a restaurants and bartending, and then at a labor union before coming into law school.
So you're used to dispensing advice.
Yeah. And then Dalen and Hoku, do you want to?
Before law school, I was a special education teacher in Rarotongan, Cook Islands.
Wow, fantastic. Cool.
Before law school, I was getting my bachelor's degree in Hawaiian studies with a focus on Malama'aina and Kukulu'apuni, which is like a politics side of Hawaiian law.
Wow, very, very cool.
Yeah.
The science of persuasion. You know, it's funny because early in my professional career as a fisheries biologist, many conferences talking about protecting and restoring environmental resources and watersheds to benefit communities, especially indigenous community. And these were people from all over the world. The one thing that the thread in common was that there really aren't enough environmental attorneys or indigenous law attorneys that out there to help all of the issues that are going on. This issue of water. Hawaiians, as you girls know, have looked at water sacred because without it, we wouldn't even be alive. And even people like Mark Twain, Samuel Clements, said 156 years ago that, you know, whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting over. Hopefully we won't fight over it, but there certainly will be some deliberations, but it's all going to boil down to what are the facts. That's where attorneys and laws come in.
And so we're
glad to have you here today.
Yeah, and glad to have you guys coming over this evening. And I'll kind of prompt the question about what's going on this evening with an example that I think is pertinent to why it's important for you guys to be in the program and hopefully pursue the careers that you're thinking about, because to me, a lot of law is obvious. So if Don attacks me, right, I know that kind of intuitively there's some law that should prevent him from doing that.
That's right.
And I can call the police and I can get some protection. If somebody comes and takes water that I'm using, I don't know who to go to or what's up. Is that legal? You know, so I understand that there is a body of law surrounding water, but it seems to be obscure and not well known, and many of our community members don't understand that.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the purpose of what you guys are coming over here for.
Exactly.
Is that right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's kind of like the purpose of the training. We Kahuliao, which is the Center for Native Hawaiian Excellence here at the law school, with the help of OHA, was able to produce all these primers on different issues that affect the Native Hawaiian community here, water being one. And so these primer trainings are ways to kind of disseminate that information so that people do know their rights.
Yeah, because, I mean, one thing that's important, and, like, to your point, Adam, that we don't always know our rights or what exactly the laws are. There's some great laws on the books, but if we don't know what our rights are, then they're kind of pointless. So it really takes individual, like, whether it's, you know, we're all like mini warriors for the environment or the protection of Native Hawaiian rights, we have to be educated about these things so when we see it, we can spot it, we can report it, and we can fight back in those situations. So that's why I think these the primers are fantastic and the trainings are great, because that education is essential to making those laws really work for us.
Yeah, so you guys have mentioned the primer, and we haven't actually kind of described that. And that now there's the primer was written by Kapua Sproat. In fact, and of course Kapua is the one that teaches the class and is your guys' kind of mentor in this area, and will be coming over with you guys. And for our listeners, you know, Kapua is a Kama'aina to Kauai from Kalihibai, and the folks are farmers, fishermen, and help manage the Waipa program, which manages the Kalo Festival, which is coming up tomorrow also. So Kapua wrote this primer and has done several of these workshops before. Is that right?
Right. And she can explain it so that anybody can understand. Like, I knew nothing about the water code before taking this class, and I think she's very accessible and has the code pretty much memorized.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is important. So Kapua has written a primer, so we've got a handbook that's available for people. But then you, Kapua, and you guys are going to be here on Kauai tonight at the Niumalu Canoe Club to help kind of go through the primer and explain the law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the primers are, the way that they're written is very easy for people to understand. Like, it doesn't take a law student who has training to read laws and, go through complex statutes to break it down. They're broken down very easily, and they're very easy for, the ordinary person to understand.
That's a really good point. I know Kapua, when she introduced, I think it's Kawaiola?
Yeah.
When she introduced that here on Kauai and at Kilauea School about 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago, she gave me a whole stack of copies, and I've given them to watershed community, and it's been extremely helpful. Because it is in pure, unadulterated 8th grade English, and it's easy to follow and use.
Yeah.
It's very valuable.
Yeah, and I tell you, that's really important. I mean, on a side note, I've been working on an issue, and I've been reading, like, the rules of Hawaii civil procedure, and I'm, I can read and write.
But you don't know what it is.
I don't know what the heck it's going, so.
Okay, we don't either. Okay. Kidding. Sorry, professor.
So for someone who's tried to kind of wade through the legal system on their own, I can really appreciate the value of distilling it down into simple English and then being there to explain it to people. It's just really, really important.
Yeah, and the primers are actually available. They're available in hard copies, but they're also available online if people are interested in looking them up. You can go to the Kahuliao website and look under legal resources. But we'll also be providing hard copies of the primer tonight for free for those who RSVP.
Excellent.
Okay, so and it's as a reminder to folks, the Huli'au program is a program within the Richardson School of Law at the University of Hawaii. Is that right?
Yes, it's a Center for Native Hawaiian Excellence.
Great. And then you guys are going to come over for this workshop this evening, and that's going to be, I'll remind folks again, that's going to be at the Niumalu Canoe Club, which is in Kalapaki, at the now Willy Willy end of the old pier, Makai of...
By the breakwater.
JJ's Broiler,
yeah.
And then you guys are going to be there from like 6 to 8, you're going to be present some stuff and then be there to answer questions for folks?
Yeah, definitely.
Very cool. Now, so you're going to have copies of the primers, you're going to kind of go over it and be able to answer questions. That is fantastic. And how many of you are coming over? Just you three?
No,
there's a bunch of us. I think about, 7 or 8 of us? Yeah, including Professor Kapua Sproat. She'll be there as well.
So we'll like each have our own personal attorney.
Well, this ought to be fun.
Now, of course, when you have clients like Don and I, did Kapua mention that you're not going to get rich and powerful in this?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a basic understanding. Okay. Yeah, you kind of make that choice. I mean, for me, I made that choice before coming into law school. Yeah. I was kind of like, you have a kuleana that's not going to make you millions of dollars, but it's okay, though. It's definitely rewarding in its own.
Ladies, it's coincidental. Yesterday I was in a big meeting with Nainoa Thompson, and he said exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
What we fight for, protecting the environment, the oceans, etc., it's we're not going to get rich at it. That's not why we do it.
Right.
We do it for our children, our grandchildren, Mopuna. It's all about the future.
So if you don't mind, I'd like for us to talk a little bit about Hawaiian water law in particular, because I don't, most of us don't understand it at all. And what little I've learned is how different it is from water law in other states or on the mainland, and how important that is to Native Hawaiians, and how pertinent it is to Native Hawaiians and the environment in Hawaii. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. And we're very fortunate that we have laws that try to, encompass and incorporate kind of customary laws, and if executed correctly, arguably the water code could actually work.
It's this issue came up in the conference I was in yesterday. The water code is the best thing we have right now. It has a lot of things that that need to be amended in the future. There's no definition of stream channel, for example, in there. There's no way to protect existing hydrologic and hydraulic conditions along streams like there are in the state of Washington's water code, which they call their hydraulic code. But still, we have some fantastic water law that was established a long time ago and then finally codified and updated in starting in 1968 with the McBride versus Robinson case out in Hanapepe. And then what we have today was really strengthened in the two Supreme Court hearings of Waiahole and Navaeha on Maui.
Yeah.
So kind of to prompt the question about water law and how different it is, let me just pose this. So let's say I'm a large landowner here on Kauai or large land controller. So, you know, I own the mountains, the rain falls on the mountains, runs through the streams. Streams are in my property, runs all the way to the ocean. I own all the land. I own the trees on the land. I own the water. Is that correct?
No.
You don't own the air either, Adam.
See, it might seem that way, but, you know, Hawaii law actually embodies a lot of old Hawaiian law and the concept that existed way back when, which was natural resources were there for the benefit of the people. They weren't commodities that you could own privately and, you know, kind of like lock them up and give them to others or sell them to others. And you can see those in the modern day laws, like the Constitution, the Hawaii State Constitution. You know, they endorse a public trust doctrine that says the water is for the benefit of the people. You can't own it.
Yes, in fact, when you really get down to the nitty-gritty in the public trust doctrine, and it's clearly in our Article 11 of our state constitution, it's so that governments manage ecosystems so they provide food for people. Those are public trust natural resources, water, air, land, trees in the forest, etc.
Okay, now this is an interesting point. It sounds like this is kind of peculiar to water because under state law, you can own the land. I can own the tree on the land, but a person can't own the water. Is that right?
That's right. And they're also like, even, I mean, I think most people are familiar with the idea that the beaches are in the public trust, right?
So
property owners can't exclude folks from accessing the beaches, and water is similar and different. I mean, it's similar in the fact that property owners can't exclude, can't use resources to the detriment of other citizens of the state. And so it's a little bit different in that, like you were saying, you can own the land, but arguably you can't necessarily keep people off of that land. But the same is true for water, where I guess that's a little bit different with water. You can't actually own the water.
So, like, that on your question, you know, you can own the land, and water is going to move through your land, you know, whether it's by stream or by spring or, you know, whatever it is. You have rights to the water, but you don't own it. So you have, like, appurtenant rights. You could even have some type of Native Hawaiian rights to that, riparian rights, correlative rights. And, you know, there's all different types, but you can't necessarily say, like, I own this. I, you know, am exercising power over it.
I think when you look at water law in many states and then compare it to Hawaii, most states would, and all indigenous people would pick our law over Colorado's, let's say, or some others. And it's, to a large degree, it goes back to traditional Hawaiian water rights. I mean, that were before the monarchy overthrow, where they looked at water not as a resource per se, but as part of an inextricable part of their living community. That's why it was so sacred. You can't live without it any more than you can live without air.
Yeah. And then that's why kind of the public trust doctrine is so important, too, kind of like Morgan was saying, is that it puts the state in a position as a trustee over these natural resources, which include things like water, land, air, minerals, and
it's really having to manage and conserve those resources for the betterment of everybody and not just to the betterment of a select few.
That's right. Okay, so I'm gonna pause this just for a second to remind our listeners who might have just tuned in that this is Kauai Kai and Why, and we're talking with Hoku Kaai Kuahiwi, Dalen Gibson, and Morgan Evans from the Kahuliao program at the Richardson School of Law at the University of Hawaii Manoa. They are coming over this evening to be part of a free workshop on Hawaiian water law that will take place at 6 p.m. at the Niumalo Canoe Club in Kalapaki. And we've kind of worked our way through this conversation to the point where we all understand that that water, perhaps uniquely in Hawaii, cannot be owned, but is considered a public resource. Is that right?
Yes.
And so, okay, so that's, wow, all of a sudden we've opened up to the public, and so now I'll open it up to our listeners to call in for questions as we kind of continue to explore this really important idea that water cannot be owned. It's a public resource. So then, to me, the question comes up, well, then who decides who uses the water? I mean, how does that work? I mean, do I... What,
who carries the biggest club?
Yeah.
The Water Commission.
That, I heard something.
I heard that.
Hold on. Dean, do we have a caller? Do you ladies, would you like to take a question real quick?
Oh, sure.
Okay. Go ahead, caller.
Hi, ladies. Aloha.
Hi.
Welcome to Kauai. Hi, Don.
Hey, aloha.
Aloha, Cheryl. Is this Auntie?
Is this Cheryl?
Yes, it is.
Oh, we've been trying to reach you.
We're so happy to hear your voice.
Okay.
Mahalo.
A question. 1989, as you recall, Mr. Pades had a declaration for the plantations and Kuleana lands to be registered for water. What happened to all those records?
Well, I think Cheryl, what you're referring to is when the Water Code was established in 1988, it basically required water users in Hawaii to declare their use,
right?
And those records are over in the Commission on Water Resource Management. In fact, I think you can even look them up on the DLNR website, Department of Land and. Go ahead.
Oh, and I'm also agreeing that, yeah, you can find them online.
Yeah, they should be online.
Okay.
And those are public records, Cheryl. Now, just because, let's say I'll make this up, your auntie Mildred never recorded her water use on her Kuleana land
right.
in, say, Hanama'ulu. She still has a pertinent water rights because those rights, along with responsibilities, go with the land, not with any deadlines. There was really no, I think there was a 10-year deadline in the 88 one. Some people filed much
later.
Well,
my fears at that time was that because it's going to be public records, it is public records, certain people or some, like maybe the water department, would want to, discover some water by the public records and somehow would divert or sell. So I was kind of wondering about that.
That's a good concern.
So, ladies, can you want to help address Auntie's?
Please.
So it all kind of depends on the area that the water is in, because if it's designated like a surface water management area, then there's kind of heightened regulations for how water can be diverted. But like Don said, if you have a pertinent right to the water in whatever plot of land that you're talking about, then it does come with extra rights to kind of use that
in
water.
Your opinion, I know there was a long declaration for plantations, like Grow Farm, Lihui Plantation, etc. Have they reapplied? The Grow Farm, who's ever taking care of the lands that they once had in cultivation of cane. Are they still registering water?
Sorry, I don't really know. I don't really know to know that particular question.
Well, let me rephrase Auntie's question. You know, if they were taking water for growing sugarcane, and now they're going to take water to grow a parking lot or whatever,
a golf course.
Do they have to tell the water if they recorded it for one use in 1988? Do they have to report the change?
Exactly.
And they already recorded. I'm sorry, I don't really know, but Hoku might.
I would say yes, that they would need to record.
Well, I'd like to find out if they have for real, you know, in documentation. Because water has been, you know, low in certain streams, and nobody knows where they're being, you know, diverted or being used, like the water companies, the water bottling companies. I am just, you know, kind of ticked on that. Well, people are selling water in bottles.
Oh, I kind of got
right. Yeah.
I mean, there's a big problem with what you're talking about is that these users, I mean, like, the justification was when they had these massive sugarcane plantations, you know, they were able to justify all this use of water.
Right.
And now, over time, it's a little confusing who's controlling the water and where it's going.
Exactly.
One of the differences between what we're, I guess, a bit more familiar with on Oahu versus Kauai is that our water users do have a requirement for reporting that's a bit different, and that's because the water's managed. It's a designated water management area,
yeah.
And so there's different requirements for big water users.
Well, the reason why I also, you know, mentioned that is because of our natural resources that need these kinds of water, like Hula'ia.
Yeah.
You know, I know you're going to be having your meeting down at Niumalo. That is where I come from also. And we have Kuleana lands. You know, the water is pretty polluted.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when, you know, we have a harbor next nearby. And even with Dilbor not complying with boats that are in the stream.
Yeah.
But the natural resources, like the opai, you know, and, you know, certain fishes are being depleted, but they're in now murky. The water quality is bad because there's not much water that's coming down. And a new thing that's going on with development is the energy, where you have all the trees, ambusia trees, will be soon happening for energy as you go down to Koloa. And some of that water, I'm uncertain whether the quality of that water returning into our streams is good or not.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just wanted to throw it out there under discussion.
And actually, that's like a really good point and a very big concern that we come across in our studies. And sorry we couldn't answer your specific question about whether or not the changing of the use of the water changes the rights to that water, because we don't really know that specific answer,
right.
Especially if it's not a designated management area, because kind of like what Morgan said, it's like the Wild West in those situations,
yeah.
And that's when we have the most concern in terms of protecting our water, is when there isn't a managed area, and there we don't know what's going on with the water, because that's when we can't trace what's causing the downstream harm to, you know,
Well, I'd like to know, so I'll give it to you,
right.
Well, all of you that's listening.
So, ladies, you have exactly 5 hours and 25 minutes to answer Auntie Cheryl's question.
I know. No problem.
Sister Cheryl, will we see you tonight?
No, I'll be listening.
Excellent.
Is there a teleconference? Somebody can put their phone on and I can listen?
Well, we'll see if we can do that, Cheryl.
Right. Okay, you know, technology has changed. I mean,
it's a good idea.
Thank you very much.
Mahalo.
I really appreciate it, and I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, we're so happy to hear you from your voice, Cheryl.
Thank you.
Aloha, my love to you all.
Right, aloha.
Aloha.
Okay.
You know, I vaguely remember in the Waiahole case, Campbell Estate argued that they'd been using this water forever for sugar. Not forever, but for 100 years or something.
Yeah.
And they made a very strong case, the the Waiholi Hui, Hakipu'u Association, etc., that their use had changed. And if the use changes, you have to re-record and kind of start all over again. It's like some of the biotech companies on the west side that originally leased land from Robinson and thought they could piggyback on their conservation permit on file with the USGS. No, you can't do that.
Yeah.
You have to come in all over and get a new conservation plan because you've got different crops, you're growing them in different methods, et cetera.
Okay, but that's but I'm glad Anthony called up.
Oh, that was a good question.
It's a great question. Let's see if we can figure out.
That's right. By tonight.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that is a big issue, right? I mean, we still have many of the old plantation systems intact. And so let's see. You know what? We've got another caller. It's going to have another question that we can't answer.
Go ahead, caller. Well, maybe.
We'll see.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Go ahead.
That was a good question because I got the same situation I've been dealing with for the last 30 or 40 years. I'm an Anahola, and the plantation bugged out. And this guy that bought land up there thinks he owns the water now.
Oh.
And all the opus are dying, and there's no prawns, and the lowies are drying up, and the whole thing. So I will be there tonight.
Excellent, excellent.
It's great to hear about this.
You know, and the underlying principle of this workshop tonight with Kapua Sproat and her law student is to teach our community how they can get their rivers and streams restored. And the number one step is returning in stream flows.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, knowledge is power, so I'm glad you're coming over. Could you clarify a little bit more where it's going to be?
Yeah, it is at the Niumalo Canoe Club Hale, which is a big kind of almost two-story building, virtually right on the beach. Makai of an ocean side behind JJ's Broiler. So if you go down if you go out to the old jetty
and Pine Tree Inn,
all right along the concrete breakwater there, and there's a big barn-like building that's the Canoe Club, and so we'll be there at six p.m.
Okay.
It's it's got two big barn-like doors. When they're open, it's probably 20 feet wide.
Yeah,
for getting canoes in and out.
Yeah.
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock. Yes, sir.
All right. Great. Thank you. Guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, I think that this issue that Sister Cheryl brought up of what happens in those kinds of cases is actually going on right now, according to some calls I've got from watershed inhabitants out in Lauai.
Oh, yeah.
Is that a call in?
Wow, you guys have sparked some interest.
Yeah,
here.
You've got
that. Yeah, no, that's a really, we're here trying to rack our brains and rack our research.
Have any of you ladies gotten any calls from people from Lauai?
No.
Okay, well, recently A&B built a new concrete weir and initiated a new permit with the Water Commission to divert water from Lauai Stream.
Oh, interesting.
Many people downstream are really upset about it. That permit was originally issued, I think, in 91 or 92, when sugar was still in effect.
Right.
There's no sugar now.
Yep.
Where is it going?
Right.
Okay, I think we got another call.
Please, go ahead, caller.
My comment is, this is Susan Allen calling, and my comment is who would be that arrogant to come to Hawaii and think that they own the water? You know, that just, infuriates me.
Well, it does a lot of us, Susan, and it's
well,
called...
A lot of people.
Yeah, a lot of people. And it's basically the difference between greed and aloha.
Yeah.
Another thing, and to bottle the water and sell it.
Well, now that's an interesting, because Cheryl brought that up also.
Yes.
Now, maybe the girls can help us understand that issue. So is it so my I get the bottling companies have wells and they pump the water out and they bottle it? Is that what's going on?
Are you talking about Kauai Springs?
Yes.
That one there's a bunch across the state, right?
Yeah,
so
there's
how does
others
that work?
In the state of Hawaii.
Right.
Listen, I own a restaurant and of course I don't know why people want bottled water. But I have to provide it, but I buy the least expensive bottled water I can buy. And I tell the people, my customers, I go, listen, you guys, I would prefer to give you tap water. It's the same thing you're drinking.
Susan, what I would suggest is get a whole bunch of stainless steel liter water bottles with a little flyer on why they should refill their own stainless steel bottle and what positive impacts that'll have on the environment, and you'll sell a million of them.
I go round and round. They just insist on buying bottled water. It's unbelievable to me.
Well,
you know, I mean, I sell it really inexpensively. It's just like giving it away. They want the bottled water.
Well, it's probably next on our list at the county council, among many other good steps. We banned the throwaway plastic bags. We'll probably, there are many counties in the United States that have already.
But we don't have that on Kauai.
Don't have what?
The plastic bags.
I know, because we banned it.
Right.
We were the first in the state.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so Susan, that's a really good point. And
so I think, you know, I'd like to ask the girls if they know that does the water law apply to pumping and bottling water as it does, like, you know, surface water?
Oh yes, any use of water.
Okay. All water, ground and surface, is
okay.
Under the public.
And the water code covers surface water as well as groundwater. Yeah, and any agency is bound by the public trust doctrine. So
precisely.
Yeah.
Any agency and any
individual
business.
I'm not too sure about how it would affect business, but if you, like individuals in their private citizen capacity, but definitely if an agency is having to make a decision about whether or not to permit someone to use.
Oh,
the water,
I get it.
There's going to be a balancing test.
That's right.
Using the water.
Well, I think what they do is that they lease the land where their well is, and then that's how they get the water. I don't really understand how they do it, but nobody owns any water around here, period. And if that landowner, wherever he is, thinks he owns the water rights, you know, he needs to leave. He needs to go somewhere else and live.
Or learn, like
he
all
certainly,
of us have.
He certainly needs to be educated.
The thing is, no one owns the water, but the idea of public trust and what is that we all should have the right to use the water. So,
well, he's not going to get it. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm just so mad at all these people. All these people.
We agree.
But just, Susan, I'd say don't get too mad because it's not healthy.
Yeah.
But get involved.
Yeah,
we will change it. Pono will prevail.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully. I've been here since 68 and I haven't seen much of it.
Well, I encourage folks to come listen to the ladies
come
tonight.
Come down tonight.
Because the more of us that understand the law, the more solidarity there will be.
That's right. This is all about
education. I understand the law a lot.
Yeah, okay.
But it's when the real estate people sell these properties, they don't tell them about the law.
That's right.
Most of them don't know anything about the law.
They don't tell them anything about the law, just like the vacation rentals. They tell them they can rent anything they want to rent, anytime they want to rent it.
So, Susan, we'll be looking forward to seeing you tonight.
Okay.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Okay, aloha.
All right.
Aloha.
Right, we've got one more caller, but ladies, bear in mind I that topic is going to come up again tonight about bottled water and wells.
Guaranteed.
Right. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So bring your stainless steel bottle.
Okay. go ahead, caller.
Hello.
Hello.
My question concerns Waipo'o Falls.
Waipo'o Falls. That's
which was turned off and then turned on again for a few days and then turned off again. I understand.
Okay, Waipo'o Falls is in Waimea Canyon.
And it's a tributary of the Waimea River.
Right, it's a big feature, and an 1,800-foot fall, I think.
It's a tall one, for sure.
Yes, I spent years taking my children there because it's so beautiful, or was.
And you're saying that somebody, like, turned the water off?
Yes, apparently they were directing it down one of the dry ravines that goes down before Polahalli along the Nepali.
That's
but there's
right.
nothing in the ravine, really, except rocks and dirt. And therefore, it's washing rocks and dirt into the ocean.
That's right. And according to the water code, that's considered wasting water.
Yes. Yeah. And they, if that's been going on for I don't know how long, but various people have noticed that Waipa'o Falls is no longer there. And then I heard last week, I think, or the week before, that someone had changed the gates. I mean, it's really just a matter of lifting one gate and closing another up in Coquay. And someone had gone up and changed the gates so that the water was running from the falls again.
So
into the Waimea River, which is important to the people downstream because they need that water.
That's exactly right. And just for our listeners, sir, before you get off the line, please leave your name and contact number with Dean so we can talk about this more. But what I will say is, and the ladies from Richardson School of Law are fully aware of all of this, the Waimea community has already petitioned the Commission on Water Resource Management to restore a lot of that diverted headwater stream of the Waimea back into the Waimea River, and they've also documented the wasting of water that you've just described.
Right.
That is not permitted by the water code.
Right. And who knows who changes the gates?
That's right.
And
so
I would like to know that.
Well, you might want to come all the way to Na Willy Willy tonight.
It's not that far from me. I can ride my bicycle down the hill.
most refer to as the new Niumalu Canoe Club, which is not in Niumalu.
It's on the jetty or near the jetty?
Near the jetty. You stand on the jetty, look Makai towards the water, turn around 180 degrees, and it'll be right in front of you.
Oh, okay. I used to go to Club Jetty many years ago.
Oh, this is way.
It's at the opposite end. Back towards Duke's.
Oh, the other jetty.
It's at the jetty that meets the beach at Kalapaki.
Okay.
J.J.'s Broiler.
Yeah.
Yep.
I know where Pine Trees used to be.
There you go.
Right almost in front of Mauka.
That building that almost became a sushi restaurant.
That's right.
It kind of looked like one, but
okay. Yeah, you know, there's going to be other people there tonight
I'll be able to find it. That's okay.
Oh yeah, you'll see it.
There'll be people there tonight that know what's going on in Waimea, so we will be able to hook you up with them.
Absolutely. I'd like to know who changed the gate so that the water came back, and then again, who changed the gate so that the water went away again and down that dry ravine into the ocean.
Appreciate your call, caller.
Right, thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha. I'll just say, to address the caller's concerns, what's great about what he's done is just that observation alone starts this process of enforcing the water code, and also that a lot of those answers really involve calling the county agencies and tracking down what's going on with the water. And a lot of what we've done in the clinic is really just investigation type work that anybody can do.
Okay.
You absolutely have the right to the information that various county agencies have, as well as the State Water Commission. So anyone who's listening, if you notice changes in surface water sources that are dramatic, go ahead and give the county a call. Go ahead and give the state a call, because that's your right as a citizen to have that information and to get an explanation for what's going on.
Precisely.
Great. Thank you.
I think we have another caller.
Yeah, we got two calls. You guys, you're hot.
Caller, go ahead.
Thank you. Am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Okay. I would suggest to Ms. Allen and generally the notion of bottled water should be treated like what we call sin taxes, like we put on cigarettes and other things, where rather than charge very little for that bottle of water, she should be charging a premium, or the county should, and take that money and put it back into water resources, conservation, or whatever appropriate fund it should be into. But a bottled water should be very expensive to let people appreciate the value of it, and also to steer them towards not using bottled water.
That's right. That's a good point.
Hear, hear, brother.
Okay, so, I mean, I think it's a market-driven business, and so making it very cheap, in a way, she is just actually facilitating using bottled water, even though she's trying to help her customers. It really is kind of a double-edged sword in a lot of ways as far as how that plays out, I think.
You're absolutely correct.
And that's a whole other conversation about how we charge for the most fundamental, valuable resources we have, brother. That's
essential resources.
Essential resources. You're right.
Absolutely.
On. Absolutely. Yeah.
I agree. And while I wouldn't like to pay $5 a gallon for bottled water, I would like it to be as expensive as gasoline so that, again, we steer people towards other ways of getting their drinking water.
Well, brother, it already is more expensive than gasoline in many countries.
Yep.
Well, and it should be, and yet our tap water is so inexpensive that at this point, why people are not willing to at least use that as their basic source of water is mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, thank you for the call.
Thank you. Yeah.
And mahalo, gentlemen, for the one.
Thank you.
All right, we got another caller. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Cheryl again.
Oh, hey, Auntie, thank you.
Aloha,
what
Cheryl.
Happened to Apoha or Opu?
You know, Cheryl, it's funny. It's funny you bring this up. I was in a conference with our chairman, Bill Isla, and our new director just yesterday. And one of the universal agreements is I have a new director with the Division of Aquatic Resources. He's a great guy. We're going to go places. But without good partnerships with the Department of Health Clean Water Branch, without clean, clear working relationships with the Commission on Water Resource Management, which is another division within DLNR, we're not going to be able to easily and efficiently restore our streams and our estuaries and wetlands.
Well, you know, that was an indicator because O'opu is Malkatumakai, right?
That's right, that's right.
Well,
and those are indicators, like the Popoki. At the beach, at the mouth of Kalapaki.
That's right.
It's an indicator of water quality.
And that's exactly what...
I'm very surprised that they got that O'opu out of the list.
So, Auntie, I'd like to ask the ladies that question. Does the O'opu, do fish and fishermen and fisherwomen have a role in water law?
Definitely.
Okay, how does that work?
Specifically, O'opu, that's Native Hawaiians have gathering rights to O'opu.
That's right.
And when the streams dry up because of the lack of water, those O'opu, they die, and they're not there anymore for people to gather and to have access to eat and stuff. So it's, I guess in a sense, those would be Native Hawaiian rights, and not really fishermen rights, but, you know, they fall under the same category.
Ladies, let me just add this, that those O'opunakea, which were so culturally important to Hawaiians that they name a god after it, the only fish in the state that has a god named after it, is also a public trust resource. So the state is a trustee and is mandated to protect those fish for everyone. But if, you know, fish, just like us, they need water. No water, no fish.
I'm right on board with broad interpretation of natural resources. I think the public trust doctrine should apply to everything. And right now it's been used very narrowly in just water, but I think the more we start reminding our state agencies that it's all natural resources, and then I think that we can start utilizing the public trust doctrine to its
That's right.
potential.
Well, and the language of our state constitution clearly outlines that the resources of Hawaii are all to be held in public trust.
That's right. Article 11.
That the more we enforce these concepts, the more we can really expand the idea of the public trust doctrine. And importantly, I think the language of the Constitution talks about these resources being preserved not only for today's users, but for future generations.
That's right.
So there's an obligation on state actors as well as private individuals to make sure that we're honoring the public trust doctrine. And
good, I like that. I like that. Maybe we should put on the list the popoki.
I think we should have more.
We're very sensitive to water pollution.
That's right.
It's so clear. I think sometimes we need to remind people of the laws and that govern these resources, because these constitutional provisions came as a direct result from kind of the plantation era in 1978. And when we had our CONCON at that time, the delegates were able to put in a lot of heightened protections for things that were important at the time and that are still important. And I think it's a matter of reminding people, reminding our policymakers, our agencies, of the purpose behind these provisions, and so we don't have people forgetting, and that we so that we know how to protect our rights.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, that popoki, we can catch more with that.
There we go. There we go.
For our listeners, she's talking about the little mole crab that buries in the sand at Kalapaki and other beaches.
So Auntie Sarah, we're
gonna... and one more thing, even the Bye Bye Oli has disappeared.
That's right.
And also, they should have different languages for the fishing regulations, because there are people that are coming here from different countries, and you know, Micronesia, you have the Philippines. I think that language should be also interpreted too. You know, their language.
Yeah.
That suggestion is going to be implemented. That decision was made yesterday. You're right on target, Sister Cheryl.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Mahalo.
We're going to try to take one more call, ladies, if we can.
Okay.
Go ahead, caller.
Aloha. I'm greatly concerned about the hole they're going to burrow into the mountain in order to get more water out. That project is supposed, what happened to it? First of all, we don't read anything about in the news about it anymore.
Right.
And that project is supposed to cost $50 million altogether.
Huge.
Wouldn't it be wiser to to get the old waterways that are on the outside of the mountain back in shape so that the water can flow to those people who need it?
Mm-hmm.
Who is in charge of the water in the mountain?
Oh, good question.
I think that project should be a huge concern to Hawaii residents. Not only the expense of it, but what it could do to the environment, as well as culturally, how it will impact water users there. It should be a great concern to Kauai residents.
And then a previous caller called in and was talking about waste and how water is being wasted on Kauai in various ways. And I think that's a direct correlation between waste and what's going on or what they're planning to do up Mauka. So I think you're absolutely right that I think you kind of need to revamp how everybody is using their water and how everybody is thinking about their water before you start utilizing extreme measures.
That's right, and I just will remind that about 10 years ago when Ernie Lau was the head of the Kauai Water Department, he estimated about 50% of all drinking water in Lihue region and Honomaulu, other urban areas, was used for watering gardens and lawns, and that most water use was used in the summer. A gray water ordinance might reduce the use of potable drinking water by 50%. That means you've got 100% more water.
Yeah.
And an ordinance like that, and Ernie thought it was a really good idea, but then took another job, and it never... I've heard the county is now considering it.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah. Well... So many important things to discuss about water, and we're going to have more opportunity this evening when Hoku, Dalen, and Morgan, thank you for taking the time to join us today. You'll be here on Kauai this evening.
Right, and we hope to see a lot of your listeners down there tonight as well.
I think you will.
Yeah, bring all your questions, and we will try to come prepared with the answers.
And then if we don't know, Professor Kapula Sprout will be there.
There
you
go.
She wrote the book.
Well, thank you guys so much for dedicating your lives to this and dedicating the time today. We look forward to seeing you, your classmates, and your kumu at the New Malo Canoe Club in Kalapaki this evening at 6 p.m.
Mahalo, ladies.
Thank you for
Mahalo,
having
Adam.
Us.
Mahalo, Don.
Ahuiho.
Ahuiho.
And Don and Adam will be back again. Oh, I'm going to have to look at the calendar.
Oh, yeah. We got
is that like
couple, the 20th.
That's like the 20th. Yeah, we'll
there's
see you back on the 20th.
There's a couple of things we need to change on that.
Well, very good.
They're small, and we could do it in 5 minutes.
We could. Well, we'll discuss that after the program.
Oh, we're still on the air? Sorry about that.
Thank you, Dean, again.
My pleasure, and thank you, gentlemen, for a great Kauai Kai and Wai.
Thank you, Dean.
See you next time. Thanks for all of the community's participation in this. That's what makes community radio work.
Yeah.
Thank you all for your calls.
Mahalo.
Aloha.